At Quite the Thing Media, we aim to bring you the best podcasts produced by independent creators, made without constraints.
Hey everyone, this is Eric Woods from the Cinematic Sound Radio Podcast. Join the podcast father on this journey, sharing great things all sorts of creators are doing. He's the Indie Podcaster.
You've been searching for a podcast. Want to know about some great artist? Yeah. You've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster with your host, the podcast father.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Indie Podcaster. I'm your host, Jeff, aka Podcast Father. Thanks for listening and thanks for telling a friend. My man TTP joins me, Torch the Poet from the Crow Show. Take Flight Crew Captain. What's going on, Torch?
What's up, brother? I'm over here just trying to contain myself because you have a true legend in the game that you are blessed to have a conversation with. So I don't wanna hold up too long here, but y'all still check out the Crow Show. That's my podcast. And it's every Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in Twitter Spaces. But enough about my brother. You got a legend on.
Join him for Thirsty Thursdays, and we'll segue into what Torch is referring to here. Cinematic Sound Radio Podcast. Creator Eric Woods had a great conversation with him. This is a soundtrack music podcast. Eric actually first started this podcast on the radio forever ago and has stayed true to it and let it build in podcast form. Torch, you want to go into some remarkable events that are coming up for this podcast?
What's bigger than the fact that Eric will be celebrating his 25th year doing the show? 25 years. I mean, I'm 44, so that's like half my lifespan, you know. Shout out to you, Eric. I mean, you're brilliant to have 25 years pioneering, leading, formatting, guiding. The list goes on. Shout out to you. Oh, shout out to another 25 years, brother.
25 years ago, I was in like fourth grade in Miss Lee's class or something in the state of Washington. Anyway, no. Eric is great, and I actually talk with Eric a lot. I have a lot of respect for Eric. He has a great mind for podcasting and content creating, and he really does have something special here. This is a cool interview. We go into a lot of cool things, but he brings a lot of people along the way on this journey to help make Cinematic Sound Radio Podcast awesome. He is a very humble person and a very great resource for the independent podcast community.
True legend.
You say he's like John Legend?
No, I said he's a true legend. John Legend has nothing on Eric. John Legend wishes he can be like Eric.
I like that.
Now, TTP approved on that one.
Absolutely. Let's take flight and jump into this interview with Eric Woods of Cinematic Sound Radio Podcast. But before we do that, let me share a little bit of this business.
You know how we do.
Jeff here. I want to talk about a few things that keep this podcast going. If you like the work that I'm doing, I encourage you to share it with a friend. That really is the best way to spread the word about Indie Podcaster. I would love it if you would go to your favorite podcast listening platform, may it be a Apple or Good Pods, and leave me a rating. Throw me some stars if you would like. All that word of mouth and sharing reviews of this podcast does help. This podcast and myself are proud member of Quite the Thing Media. Quite the Thing Media, podcast that speak to you. Go check out all the great independent creators from around the world. It is a community-based podcast network. Check it out. It's great. QuiteTheThingMedia.com. If you want to check out my page, it's QuiteTheThingMedia.com/podcastfather. You can request a review from me on site or submit a form to participate on this very podcast. Check it out. I highly encourage you to download and listen to your podcast on the Good Pods app. This app is awesome. You can see what your friends and influencers are listening to. They've got groups for all your interests. I've got two groups I highly suggest you check out. I've got the Indie Podcast Group. I've also got the True Crime Obsession Group. If you're an indie podcaster, Good Pods is for you. They've done crazy amount of things these last couple of months to reach out and help indie podcasters. They've got tip jars on there for your podcast. They've got performance charts that are based just on independent podcasts. Make sure you download the app and check it out. Podpage is a proud sponsor of this podcast. Podpage is an amazing resource to build your podcast website. You want them big search engine hits. You want to be out there. You want to leave your mark in the digital world. And this website makes it extremely easy to do that. You can set up your podcast website in just a few minutes. Make sure you check it out, podpage.com. That's enough of all that. Let's jump into this awesome interview. Today, I'm speaking with Eric Woods of Cinematic Sound Radio. Eric, I really do appreciate you joining me today.
I am really happy to be on your show. I'm looking forward to this a lot.
So we've chatted a little bit on the Twitterverse. Does that sound cool, calling it the Twitterverse? That kind of
thing. Sure, yes.
Eric has been at this for a long time, and I've done a bunch of different things. So we've had different conversations about that. Let's just start out with the basics, Eric. Tell us about you growing up and how you got into music, and then we'll just see where the conversation goes.
Wow. You know, as a little kid, I've always enjoyed movies. We didn't really go to a lot of them, but I liked them whenever I saw them on TV. But the first time I really noticed like music in a film was like one of the very first times I went to the theater, and that's I saw Return of the Jedi. Funny thing is, I saw the Star Wars trilogy backwards. So I did too. It's so weird.
It is.
But the experience was so incredible. And it was such a great theatrical experience because we were one of the big theaters in Toronto. It's a two-story theater. So it had a balcony, red seats, huge red curtain covering the screen. You actually had to stand up for the national anthem before the movie began, which was odd. But it was a huge screen. So this is the first time I had experienced Star Wars. And then, you know, hearing that music was incredible. So I went home and I used to draw a lot. So just opened up a sketchbook and started drawing, and I'm singing Star Wars in my head. So then I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark with my mother on a sick day from school. It was a Monday afternoon. And, you know, she's like, hey, you know, I think I got something here that might make you feel better. So her and I watched Raiders of the Lost Ark. And that just blew my mind. And to this day, still remains my favorite movie and soundtrack. And so that's where it was like, I really like the music. I like orchestral music. I love that sound. And so anytime I would hear it, my ears would perk up. So, you know, sometimes you go to a mall and, you know, an orchestra was playing and that's a weird thing, but like the TSO, you would sometimes go to malls in Toronto and start playing and I'd hear string section. I'm like, that's a really unique sound. I love it a lot. And of course, you know, I grew up in the 80s with 80s movies, and all of my favorite films had all these great scores, and most of them were by John Williams. But I didn't know that you could buy the soundtracks until probably later on when I was in high school, and I had to do a presentation on John Williams, one of my major assignments for my music class. And so I went to the library just doing research, looking for any book on him. And that's when I found the soundtrack section, and I was like, oh my God. So I picked out some of the compilations, like he wrote Jaws, he wrote Star Wars, he wrote Indiana Jones, he wrote this. And that's where it really hit me. And that's when I really started getting into it and collecting soundtracks.
And so you didn't have like a big growing up youth, you didn't play instruments or anything? Or
In grade 7 is the first time I picked up a saxophone, and it was easy. I could do it, no problem. So I was always ahead of everybody else. So I played sax for 7 years, took music class for that long. I was acing those classes. So I had a knack for music. I didn't want to do the theory. I just wanted to play. And eventually I got into percussion, so drums and timpani and whatnot. I just didn't want to do the theory. I was lazy. So I just kind of forgot it. But I still have a love for music and all types of music. I mean, again, growing up as a teenager when the grunge era hit, it was incredible. And I also like, you know, my hair bands, my hair metal bands, and But it's like rock and roll was also very important to me as well. But just music, I love music. It's always around me. Every day, it's always on here and around the house or in the car or whatever. I can't live without it.
Music means a lot to a lot of people, but you're right. It seemed like you had like a keen for it. You had a knack for the finer things as far as music goes. As you were saying, you're watching movies and you're starting to pick things out of movies. So did that just progress over time? So it started when you were a kid, like you said, Star Wars. You stayed at home, later, Raiders of the Lost Ark. So then you just continued to realize and recognize more musical things going on in movies? Because I'm not going to lie, I never, maybe I'm just naive, but I didn't think about the music in movies. But it sounds really ridiculous, but it's such a huge part. I myself never recognized that. And it's cool that you did.
Yeah, some would say that the best film score is the one you don't notice, which is somewhat true. If it's not interfering with your experience and it's enhancing it subconsciously, then it's doing its job. And most scores usually work. And there's only a handful that I can think of that have absolutely ruined my movie experience. Yeah, I had an ear for, I mean, I think anybody that's into soundtracks or film scores just has an ear for those classic tunes. Things about 80s movies, the music was so very prominent in the mix, but I was picking out that stuff I was humming those things. And the other thing that a lot of soundtrack fans used to do, we used to take tape recorders and just record the music off the screen. So if there's an end credits, usually you have the music just playing over the top of the end credits. And I would just have piles of tapes of stuff that I was recording off the TV again, because I didn't know that I can buy this stuff. But I mean, I had no money as a kid and I never really asked for a soundtrack. But yeah, as it progressed, I noticed it more and more and more. And then when I started doing deeper dives into it, again, like analyzing John Williams's music, playing the music, that really piqued my interest a lot. I had a music teacher that introduced me to this fantastic album that was recorded by the Cincinnati Pops that played a whole wide range of music that I had never heard before. Like we stayed after class. He's like, I got something, I want you to listen to. And we just sat there for 74 minutes and it just blew my mind. And then, just that there you go, there's more interest. Then I start talking to composers and just doing deep dives into all of this and gathering more. It's something that I pay attention to the most in films nowadays. And sometimes it does kind of hinder my enjoyment a little bit because sometimes I'll miss key points. And I'm glad I'm doing the podcast because that was the whole point. My whole point is to introduce people like you who might not know that there is music in the score and just separate it from the picture and also be able to appreciate it as pure music as well.
For sure. And we'll of course get into the podcast a little bit more. So what was next? You talked about where you were at saxophone 7 years. So what came after that?
In about the middle of high school, grade 11, I found out there was a communications class. We went into the room into the classroom, but it was a giant classroom and they actually had a television studio in the high school. And I had no idea it was there. And I used to love, playing around with my video camera and making little movies as a kid. And I'm like, oh my God, there's a class on this. I can take this as a class. And so for 3 years, we had grade 13 in Ontario at that time. I was taking all of the communications classes that I could, and I was shooting and also being in front of the camera. And someone said, hey, you're really good in front of the camera. You got yourself a really great voice. Maybe you should think about, getting into journalism, broadcast journalism. And I really didn't think about doing anything behind the camera. So when I went to college, I majored in broadcast journalism. I did a 2-year course, but after the first year, I enjoyed it. But when I found out that there was a possibility that my first job would be, spending 8 years in Northern Ontario being the weatherman, I'm like, that's not what I want to do. I don't want to sacrifice that much time just to hopefully realize my dream. And my dream was to do play-by-play for Hockey Night in Canada, which is just like super lofty. That's like saying, you want to be Steven Spielberg in the movie industry. So I then started getting into movie making. And so early in my 20s, into my mid-20s, I started making low to no budget movies. And we were winning awards for some of the stuff that we were doing. And I had a real knack for it. And I really enjoyed it. But at that point, I already had work and sacrificing that money to go back to school, I just didn't see the point because I was already kind of learning on the job as it was. So everything that I knew about the video industry, it started when I was 19, 20 years old, when I've got my first job. And I just
learned everything on my own. So I did not go back to school. And I don't regret it. I enjoy my job. I enjoy what I do. And I'm just glad I'm not in Sudbury, Ontario doing the weather.
That would be interesting though. Or I just got my student loan debt paid off when I was 35 years old. So, you know, you got lucky there as well,
brother.
Mine
was very minuscule. I mean, in college debt compared to university debt is very different. So, but then again, I mean, that was 20 some odd years ago. So, yeah, I paid it off in a few years, but I can't imagine having a debt load that, you know, by the time you're 35, you finally pay it off. That's insane.
Yeah. I wasn't ever in a hurry either. Of course I get it paid off right before they start canceling crap.
Yeah, that's right.
So man, that's awesome. So you kept that interest and you were kind of learning as you went along in the moment.
Yeah.
How important was that for development of knowledge and skill that you have? I did a lot of radio stuff in college. It could not prepare me for when I tried to work in radio after college, put it that
way. Correct. I agree. The more time you spend on it, doing it yourself and figuring it out for yourself, I think is way more beneficial than somebody kind of teaching you and saying, this is how it's supposed to be done. I don't mind figuring out the basics and that's fine. But when I was at a point when we transitioned in the video world from like tape to tape editing to the non-linear editing that we have now. And we had one of the earliest non-linear edit systems. It wasn't Avid, it was called the Affinity, but we were still, you know, learning it on the fly, learning how to do tape to tape, for instance. Just, it teaches you how to commit to an edit. So you're not fiddling so much. You're like, you make a cut and you're like, that's good. And because like, if you make a mistake tape to tape, it's, then you're worried about like fifth, seventh, eighth generation edits, because you always have to going back. If you want to insert something in there, it's almost next to impossible. So you have to make another version of it. And I hated that so much. But like I said, it taught me the basics of editing and committing and really paying attention to the storytelling. But yeah, once we got into nonlinear editing, it made life a lot easier. And that was at the time when I was making movies too. So I made my first no to low budget film tape to tape. And I made my second one nonlinear. I just wish I did the other one nonlinear as well. Even learning cameras, I had never shot on a beta camera, which is what all news stations were using at the time. And so I learned those cameras. I learned those different techniques. But I learned how to shoot myself. I learned how to edit quicker. I figure out the way I could do it, shoot the way that I wanted to shoot it, and then I bring that to wherever job I'm going. And I'm like, hey, you know, I know you're doing it this way, but hey, why don't we try it this way? And so I love learning on my own. I love figuring things out. Much like audio editing, I never went to school, and I do sound design, sound editing for some of our major projects. So I work for a film company, and I never went to school for that. Again, I'm learning probably from 14-year-old kids on YouTube, but you know, I'm doing it all on my own. I like that pace.
That pace really does make a difference, and it allows you to almost have less pressure to learn as well, because when you're at the pace of somebody else or a course, it's harder to kind of have the hands-on learning for sure. We still have a little bit of a gap between when you started this podcast. You've got a really interesting story. That's why we're kind of deep diving into it. So
yeah.
So what's next after these movies? So how old were you when we're talking about these movies? We're still in your early 20s, mid-20s?
Yeah, I'm in my 20s. I have graduated college at that time, but I'm still in touch with my old high school teacher who ran this communications class. During college, I would, all my time off, I would go and be his TA. And so he had mentioned that he wanted to do his own movies, you know, just to show the kids that were coming into the class, you know, what they're capable of doing. He said, what we're going to do is we're going to get a bunch of high school kids. You write the script. I'll provide all the gear. I'll provide the location. He had a cottage up in Northern Ontario. And, you know, you can use all my boats. You can use my cottage. You can blah, 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 blah. So wrote an adventure movie, and we cast a whole bunch of high school kids, and we shot over a year, a 68-minute feature. That was a lot of fun. So yeah, that was kind of just after I graduated college. And I made a couple other movies with him as well. And it was just fantastic. And I mean, literally we were spending maybe $100, $200 because everything was provided for us. So again, no to low budget movie that we were doing it, but it didn't look that way. And that's where those were going to be my demo reels to get into film school. And eventually it worked, but I ended up not going.
So you kept on working?
Yeah, I kept on working. I started working at Hudson's Bay Company. They had an internal video production company, and we would do a whole bunch of internal broadcasts for all the stores, and we do interviews with the CEO, and we would shoot product videos, and we did that for 8 years. But it was just a great way to learn, and I met a lot of great people that way, and it was a very, very comfortable job. But after that, they shut us down. I still don't know why they shut us down. And then we moved on. We took all the gear from Hudson's Bay Company, and we teamed up with another video production company. And, you know, I stayed there for a couple of years before the company essentially dissolved. I moved on to another company. I started a podcast there for beer.com, which wasn't about beer. They basically turned that website into like a online men's magazine, like Maxim. So we were doing that sort of stuff, but they're like, we want to do a podcast. And so you have radio experience, which I did. I mean, I started my radio show in 96, and they said, do you want to do a podcast? And this was my first foray into podcasting. And for about a year and a half, we were a hit. We were a huge hit. And I based it off of the Howard Stern show. And we did that sort of shock jock stuff. And I think we did about 40 episodes, and it was just so much fun. But we were a hit in Sweden, New Zealand. We were banned in the Middle East. But I mean, we weren't just like top in comedy. We were top like in the world. We were over people like Ricky Gervais at that time. We were way up there. So that was fun. Well, we met a lot of great people too doing that. Unfortunately, that company was slowly going under. They eventually sold the domain name, which is worth millions. And then I was out of work and started my own production company, but that didn't really work out. And then I worked with another company here locally in town, stayed there for about 5 years. Again, learning on the job, never shot DSLR stuff before. So that's where I learned how to shoot that, learned all about lenses, which I had no idea about, learned a whole new editing system, and then was laid off there. And now I'm working for a great guy that lives about 45 minutes north from here and lets me work from home and, you know, work my own hours. I mean, it's a lot of work, but again, still learning on the job. Shot my first RED camera project with him. So yeah, I'm just keep learning, soaking it all in. It's fantastic.
Going into the early 2000s is when I was going to college. Met a roommate that was very savvy, and he did the actual website work, but we launched a website. You talked about domain names, even RS, even the feeds were completely different than everything was completely different than, and it was manual.
Right.
I couldn't have done it, but luckily I had that help, and that's where we started. But I did want to mention, you talked about Howard Stern. That was a huge influence on myself as well, because you get into those early years, I think Howard Stern, mid-90s, probably 96 or something. As time goes by here, he's really mainstream at this point in time.
Right.
He can be heard all around the world. So it was also a huge influence for me when I started. I think we're lining up around kind of the same timeline-ish here.
Yeah.
You started a podcast, completely different back then. It wasn't even called podcasting back then.
No, it wasn't. There was no such thing. There's no such thing as, I mean, there was online streaming of live broadcasts, but there was no like on-demand anything. So after first year of college, I was in a radio class with the station manager. And again, old school class, we literally learned how to cut tape.
And it was all about to become irrelevant.
It was, yeah. And but the thing is, I never did use that skill ever again. But, you know, I did it well. But then I thought, you know, who's going to want this type of show on the radio station? But I thought, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to really put my best into this. So I put together a list of everything I owned, which I had just under 100 soundtracks. That's it. I did like a 7-page treatment of exactly what I was going to do and how I was going to do it and how it's beneficial to the station and this and that. And it's college radio. At this point, they weren't broadcasting in FM. They were just, it was all like internal throughout the college.
Right.
And cable FM, which was a weird thing. So I think only about four people in the entire city could figure out cable FM. So I went to Andy, my station manager, and I said, here's the show that I want to do. And he really, you know, he appreciated the proposal, but he's like, no, we already have a show like that. I'm like, oh, that sucks. He goes, you know, because if we've had two shows on Show Tunes, then we, you know, we can't do that. I'm like, Show Tunes? I'm not playing Show Tunes. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I'm playing, you know, like stuff from Star Wars or Indiana Jones. He's like, oh, okay. That sounds interesting. All right. We'll give you a Friday from 10 till 12, or I think it was 12 to 2. It was one of them. And yeah, I did my first show in September of 96. You know, right after that, my station manager came to me. He's like, this is one of my favorite things ever. I had no idea, you know, this music existed, and this is exactly what this station needed. So I was on college radio for 10 years up until my son was born. And the reason I quit was because it did take a lot of my time. I was traveling to the station every Saturday, spending 3 hours there. And, you know, once you have a kid, you just don't have any time. So September of 2006 is when my last FM show was.
Yeah, we're definitely lining up on the same timeline, like I said here. So how did you take that and move forward with it? Sounds like a same concept or very close to.
Yeah, it's exactly the same type of show. It has evolved. But in 2003, that's when I had a friend help me get the show online for like on-demand streaming. One of the shows that inspired me to do my own soundtrack show, I remember listening to his program, and he was all the way out in Seattle. And I was like, how in the world do I get my show? And I didn't want to do it live, but how do I get my show on demand? And eventually in 2003, his show was on demand as well. So you can listen to it whenever we wanted. Like, how do I figure this out? And so my buddy figured it out for me. And in 03, that's when we started doing on-demand streams of the program. And I had no idea what the copyright laws were or whatnot. I just did it. And nobody
They weren't going to find you very easy.
No, they weren't. But it was great because I found a new audience. I mean, people could only tune in from 12 to 3 on Saturday, and they could do it from around the world. But now once you start doing on demand, you know, anybody can listen at any time. And that was key. That's the way I did my show up until 2016, which is when I decided to jump into podcasting. And again, just saying, let's just do this and see how far we can go. I know there's issues with music and podcasts, but I'm like, let's try this. I have the backing of the labels and composers and whatnot. Still don't have a license, but I'm going to try this. And nobody has bothered me since, but I did eventually get the show licensed. So I'm able to play music on the program. And I think that's great. It's a great evolution for music and podcasts.
I'm proud to announce that the podcast father, myself, Jeff, and Podpage are teaming up for this sponsorship. Podpage is great, guys. Like I was telling you earlier, it is so critical to have an actual podcast website. I know the link trees are used a lot, but you need an actual website. You need something that's going to show up in Google. You need something that's going to show some hits, a trail that will lead to your podcast. And there's not a better way to do it than Podpage. You can build a beautiful podcast website in 5 minutes. Automatically create a listener-friendly podcast site from your RSS feed. Customize the design to create a professional look you'll be proud of in just a few clicks. There is no coding or technical knowledge necessary. There's a free trial to give this a shot, and there's different packages ranging from free to all the goods and gadgets, but still at affordable prices. Podpage is big supporters of indie podcasts, so make sure you support them also. Go on podpage.com and get your podcast website set up. With that being said, we will roll into this segment sponsored by Podpage, where we will play a trailer from a different indie podcast every episode. I hope you enjoy it and give them a listen after you're done listening to my show. Then afterwards, we'll jump back into the interview.
For 25 years, Cinematic Sound Radio has been playing for you the very best music from film, TV, and video games. We feature music from the Golden Age classics of the 30s, 40s, and 50s, the retro Silver Age scores from the 60s and 70s, and all the way through to the 80s, 90s, and the modern day classics of the 21st century.
Ooh, this sounds good.
Now,
For its 25th anniversary, prepare to experience more interviews with your favorite composers, orchestrators, musicians, and industry insiders.
Good, good. More for me and you.
Deeper dives into some of the best scores ever composed.
We're in.
And of course, more great music. New and old, from your favorite films, TV shows, and video games. So that's the Cinematic Sound Radio Podcast. Featuring 10 unique shows to satisfy your soundtrack sweet tooth.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good. I'll have that.
Find us at cinematicsound.net or wherever you get your podcasts.
We would be honored if you would join us.
Funny that you just said 2016, because I was having a discussion with somebody on one of my earlier interviews, and I referenced 2016 as the first time I had really started hearing podcasting. Before I had not heard that.
Yeah, but we were in, again, when I was at Beer.com, we were in the early days, so it was brand new. And the thing is, back then, video podcasting was huge. So that was really, everybody was getting numbers through video podcasts, and we couldn't do it. But yeah, just seeing the infancy of podcasting and then where it has evolved to today has been very, very interesting. But it seems like even in the beginning, besides our podcast, it's just once you got the big names involved, they just dominated the rankings and everybody was listening to their stuff. Yeah, but it's been very interesting to see the evolution of podcasts.
What was next? Because you did reference 2016. What was the big change as far as the quote unquote podcast?
Well, the reason I wanted to make it a podcast, because it was just an easy delivery system. Mm-hmm. And to get it on iTunes was super important. And I'd be able to get more eyes or ears onto the show. And that helped. I mean, my numbers jumped once that happened, because people are requesting it all the time. They just want to take it with them. They want to take the show with them. And it was difficult to do that as an on-demand stream. I mean, I'm sure you could find the MP3 file if you did some digging, but you know, once it's behind a streaming player, it's a little bit more difficult. But here, you know, you can take the show with you. And then that was super key. And that's what people still like about the show. I got a lot of people that have commented saying, I got an hour-long commute and, you know, just listening to whatever show we're doing, it's like, that just keeps me company. And soundtrack fans love that. And some of the people are collectors like me who have thousands and thousands of albums who are still just enjoy listening to a radio program on film music, which they find unique.
2016, the big difference there is the distribution piece of it. You can get your music out to more people off just the site, the domain, the feed that you have. You're able to take that and distribute it. That's the big turning point for podcasting for sure around that time period. You've worked with and you credit a lot of people that have helped with your show.
Yeah, it has gone from just me to now a network of 10 shows. And that was never in my plans at all. But the reason it went that way is, you know, audiences were asking for more video game music. And I'm not a gamer. I love video game music, but I'm just not a pro at it. I don't know a lot about video games. So I needed somebody to do that. And so, you know, Eric Silver, who's my video game guy, offered to do a show. And he loves video games and he knows way more than I did. So I said, yeah, I want to come on and do a show. I didn't have time to do interviews and I wanted to do interviews. So I knew a guy that was just eager to talk to composers. And so I brought Jason Drury on. But first of all, the reason I brought him on was because I'm bombarded with PR emails and just dozens upon dozens of soundtracks come my way every week. And I just didn't have enough time to play all of that stuff. And especially the older re-releases of scores that had already been written. And I said to Jason, I said, if you take some of the old stuff, could you put it into a show and just, you know, focus on that? You know, play an archive type program. That's what he called it. So, you know, I got to play the new stuff. He played the older stuff. And it was great. I was able to satisfy those people who were sending me emails, you know, can I get this on the show? And it finally worked out. And then, so that's how just getting other people on board, just, I guess, to maybe do the work that I wasn't going to be able to do. And so, you know, it evolved to getting a horror music show, a, you know, another composer type show with David Cassina, who's my in-house composer. He writes all the theme music for the show, but he wanted to talk to composers on a more theoretical musicologist level. There's no way I could do it, but he's, you know, musically inclined. And so he wants to talk to composers that way. And I thought that's unique. So bring that on. So yeah, it's now just blown up to an entire network. And I never, ever saw it going that way. It's a surprise to me.
I've worked solo a whole lot and I always tried to avoid areas that maybe weren't my strength. That's worked out. But what you actually did was different because you took areas that weren't your strength, maybe your weaknesses, we'll say, and yep. You surrounded yourself with people that would help in that area.
Exactly. That's so exactly what it was.
I don't like the word niche a whole lot. It's too much, but yet too little for me. I don't want to say your podcast is niche because you just said that you have all these different people and you do, and you can really appeal to a lot of different audiences mm-hmm. and you do. Mm-hmm. So I think that's how you've kind of grown. You started out with yourself and we'll segue this into some advice that we can give podcasters because you're a very credible one, but you started out with just yourself and I'm going to be willing to bet that you saw another significant growth in your audience when you brought all these people in that were doing the areas that you didn't have time to do and you weren't as knowledgeable about.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And especially some of the people that I have brought on, they had already established audience that they're bringing on board. So J. Blake Fischera, for instance, he's one of the newest shows. He does the horror music program Scored to Death. He's written two books on the subject, which have done very, very well. And so he brings that audience over, but he's, you know, and that's where his expertise is in. So, you know, I could talk about Halloween and John Carpenter's music for it just from my own standpoint and how I experienced it, but he's actually talked to him and he knows more than I do about it. So why would I do a show on that mm-hmm. when I can just hand it off to Blake and he can do that. And it lets me focus on what I want to do. And it's interesting because, you know, now that we have all these shows on board, I'm moving myself away from doing that kind of traditional radio broadcast that I've been doing for almost 25 years. And I'm finding it way more interesting to now talk just about one film and one score. And that's where Randy Andrews comes in. He brought Soundtrack Alley over to me because he was having difficulty finding an audience on his own. And he said, hey, can I join Cinematics? And I'm like, absolutely. I mean, I'm here to help people find an audience as well. It's not just for me. I want these people to be successful. Everybody under my banner, I just want them to be successful and be happy. But when Randy brought his unique show to me, and there are other shows out there that are doing the exact same thing where they, you know, break down the score from one movie, but I'm finding that is becoming far more interesting to me as content than just playing a score. I still like producing those, but those are very, very hard episodes to do. I write 3,000 to 4,000 words a show. It's time consuming. Finding the soundtracks, editing, it's really tough. Not that I don't do my research for these shows about one film, but I'm finding I'm more interested in that than I am in playing a whole bunch of stuff. And so I don't know whether that's where the shows that or the podcast is eventually going to evolve to, where we just stop playing what is like traditional radio shows and we're doing deeper analysis, which is what I think is the strength of a podcast. And I think us heading that direction is a good idea. So yeah, everybody under this banner of ours, it's helping to evolve the program and it's helping me to wake up and go, hey, you know, maybe we should be trying different stuff. And I love that. I love what they bring to the table.
And you can have more than one thing if it works for you. I'm big into keep it simple, stupid. if something works, it works. If it doesn't, then, you know, try something else. But it sounds simple. It is a challenge, but you can do both moving forward. And I think that's what your podcast offers that some others don't. There's been a big boom podcast.
Right.
What would you say separates yours from others? Because I shared my opinion.
That's a difficult question because you're right. There are so many podcasts out there. And now there are so many podcasts that are based on the subject of soundtracks. Like when I started, there were only a handful of radio shows out there. I was one of the first. I think there was maybe one that had been on the air longer than myself, but as it's evolved, it's become even more popular. There are three huge soundtrack shows out there that are doing essentially what I do now. So the soundtrack show analyzes one score, score of the podcast, does interviews, and same thing with soundtracking with Edith Bowman, and she does interviews, but sometimes interviews with the actual people who have made the movies and what music means to them. So we are, I would say, a one-stop shop for all that sort of stuff. I feel like I'm a big box store now, but that really, or like a mall where, you know, you can come and get anything that you're looking for. But I also surround myself with people who really, really know what they're talking about. And again, I'm not saying that the other three shows that I mentioned, they don't know what they're talking about, but that's so super important to me. I need people who are knowledgeable about the subject, and I'm just not going to let anybody in to do that. But I think it's like, if you want to find anything and everything about soundtracks and you want to learn more about it, we are a one-stop shop for that thing, which is, again, somewhere where I didn't think the brand was going to go, but I'm really happy that it has evolved to that, if that makes any sense.
Makes perfect sense. It is about evolving, but yet staying to the fundamental principles that work, to put it simply.
Right.
You and I both talk to a lot of, and I myself am just getting started, but smaller podcasts even than what we are probably. I don't consider myself a podcast guru by any means, but I'm always available, and people are DMing me all the time, and we're going through things, you know, advice, feedback, and all that. But you have been doing this for a very, very long time consistently. What do you see going on now? And there is a lot of, there's just so many podcasts, but what do you see going on? There could be some issues with podcasts.
I think the big issue right now is everybody wants success and success now. And if they don't find that success immediately, they quit. They just don't want to do it anymore. And so if that's what you're getting into it for, then just don't do it. Don't. Yeah. This has got to be fun. And there were times where it became too much for me. I put way too much pressure on me. And at that point, I was comparing myself to some of the bigger podcasts out there that were in my niche. So I think the show that I sent to you, which was the unreleased or the underrated John Williams tracks.
Yes.
That was part one of a two-part series. I never got to part two because I burnt myself out on that one.
I was looking for that, by the way.
Yeah. And I'm eventually going to do it. I teamed up with another guy who ran a very successful John Williams podcast. And so we're working on that together. But it stopped being fun. It started being a competition. So, you know, one of the shows I listened to from the bigger three, they did something very similar, but I'm like, oh, but you didn't touch upon that. You didn't touch upon that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to beat you, and I'm going to make sure that you get every single bit of information as to why these tracks are underrated and why you should listen to it. Da, 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 da. So the amount of research I did just for that one show was absolutely insane. And that's on top of the job that I already have. And then on top of a whole bunch of other, you know, things that are going on in my life. But that's when it stopped being fun. Once I finished that show, and I'm very proud of that show, by the way, for all the work that I did, and I think it turned out really well. I took an 8-month hiatus because I couldn't do it anymore. And I just wanted to stop. And that's when it stopped being enjoyable. And that sucks. And so it took me a long time for me to think about it and then come back and realize that, you know, who am I doing this for and why am I doing it? And the big thing was my fans. And I say this to the new listeners, the new podcasters out there. If you got one fan, just one, and if they communicate with you or they say something nice about your show, that's great. Stay with that person and help that person talk about your show. You know, they're going to be the one it's going to snake off from them. It's going to branch out from them. You know, one will turn to two to turn to four. It'll eventually help. But getting back to what I was going through, I needed my listeners emailing me and saying, you know what, we understand why you're taking a break, but we love your show. We would love for you to come back. Just take it easy and just, you don't have to do 3 hours, which is what I was doing before, or 2 hours. You can do a 1-hour show and we'll be just happy. You don't have to talk a lot if you don't want to, but just come back when you want to, because we love the show. And that inspires me. And then I found the love for doing the show again. But thank goodness I had a couple of other people on the network who were helping fill the void. And that was fantastic and kept the show going. But yeah, so if you're doing it for, you know, the fame and the fortune, just don't start. Do it for fun. Do it because you like talking about your subject, or do it because, you know, the three of you are have always looked for something to talk about, whatever your favorite topic is, and just go and record and have a good time. And don't worry if you only get 100 downloads for your first show, or even if it's 10. I mean, those 10 or 100 people are your most important people that you have got to make sure that you're staying on a schedule for them and making enjoyable content for them, because eventually, hopefully, organically, your show will grow because of the people that are listening to it.
I talked to this guy quite a bit. I'm not going to drop any names. He has a podcast that I enjoy, and he has not seen the growth that he would like, and on a hiatus, as you could say. He told me, I'm just going to throw out a number. I'm getting 50 people that are listening every week. That's it. Well, I said to him, if you're getting that number every week, then there is engagement. Yeah. If you've been doing this for a couple years, at least, which is past that mark now, and you're still getting that many people every week, that is engagement. You still want to grow, yes, but you can do things with that level of engagement. If there's 50, let's call them super listeners, they're going to stick with you for years. That is awesome. People talk about wanting to make money off their podcast and all that. You know, you're less than 1% of people are going to pay for content. But if you have 50 people listen every week and you get the engagement and you can get engaged with them, you can get a lot from that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, as much as I've been around a long time, I don't have a super huge audience, but I think I've got a pretty good audience again for my subject matter. Again, I never thought of asking for money or anything for the show. I always wanted to make it, it's always free. But then I started getting, again, it was because of the listener, like, hey, how in the world can we donate to the show? And I'm like, what? You want to pay for this? Yeah, we just want to help you out. And so that's when I started the Patreon. And I don't have a lot. I have about 20 people, but there are 20 loyal people that just want to help. There's even some people who are like, I just want to stay anonymous. I don't want any perks. I don't want anything, but I'm going to give you this because, you know, you've made my life so happy over these years. I got one guy that's been with me forever, since like 96, 97. He's been listening to the show. And he's like, I just want to thank you for what you've been doing. So here's a sum of money. And I'm like, that's crazy. So it's like, what do you want from this? I'm like, no, nothing. We just, you know, engage with us, talk with us, and keep doing the same thing that you're doing. But, you know, those 20 people are super important, not because they pay, but I know that those people are going to be with me forever, no matter what.
You build a community, Eric.
And that's exactly it. And I see it on Twitter as well. As much as I don't see a lot of, you know, people who I don't know, let's say retweeting my show or tagging me or whatever, but that's not necessarily important. I see the same amount of people or the same people every time who are always, you know, commenting on a show when I release it. I'm like, I know you, I know you, I know you, I know you. And I'm really glad you're still around. And you're right. That's community. And that's super important to me.
What advice do you have on building a community? I mean, we could talk about it all day, obviously, but
yeah, it's been evolving for so long. I mean, I've already joined other communities. So the big thing for Soundtrack Fans was, you know, trying to first find more people like us. There aren't a lot. And back then, there were record producers say that there are roughly 3,000 of us in the world that truly collect this stuff the way that, you know, I do. And once I found people like me, it was great to interact with them. And so I was on message boards a lot. I still am. I still communicate with those same people. And those same people are the ones that listen and are now, you know, helping out on the Patreon, which is fantastic. And I stay with that group, but I also interact with other people that I don't know. So because of COVID, a Soundtrack Fan started a weekly Zoom call for Soundtrack Fans. And sometimes there's 20 of us, just 20 of us, but we're just talking soundtracks. And it's something you would never have had the chance to do, you know, only in this amount, only in this time can you do that. And so now I'm reaching more people that way. And it might be one or two new people, but I've seen one or two of them now comment on my show. So it's getting yourself out there, but in the genre that you are a part of, or that fan group. So you might want the maximum draw, but it's just, you got to get within your own niche first. And that's how you're going to finally get an audience.
It's a great point. So to build a community, foundation you're saying was already there. You were in and discovered communities and incorporated all that into what you were building.
Yeah. And I mean, it's probably not the best advice for me, like, how do you start fresh? But I would just, my find out where more people, you know, who like the stuff that you like, where are they in the world? Whether it is Facebook, Twitter, or other message boards or whatnot. And, you know, essentially infiltrate it. And I mean, that's what I did.
Respectfully,
but it was a shameless promotion of my show. And that's how I started gaining an audience. It was just, hey, if you like this and that, then you might want to tune in. And that was great back then when you didn't have Spotify, YouTube. So that's what's becoming a little more difficult for me, because introducing new music to people, you can find that anywhere. And that was something that I would do a lot. I would get like exclusives and whatnot. You know, there's a whole story of me getting the Phantom Menace exclusive back in 99. And that, you know, nearly blew up the college's web server for 3 days. So, you know, that's why I was known for. I would get all the new stuff because I had an in with composers and record labels and whatnot. So I don't do that anymore. So now I have to evolve. Now I got to figure out, okay, the new stuff, people can hear it all the time, but now what else can I give someone that they might not have heard before?
Moving forward with your podcast, you got to really look at the way the world is right now.
Yeah.
And where absolutely. It's going and try to analyze that and see what you're going to do next.
Yes. Yeah.
I could talk to you all day, like I said, man. So what's,
I do love
talk. Yeah. 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 It doesn't have to be limited to one, right? But yeah. Walk me through your top three favorite film scores.
Wow. That's easy. It's Raiders of the Lost Ark, Empire Strikes Back, and Back to the Future. Again, I think I brought up two or three of them already.
All from your youth, though.
All from my youth. But there's other ones that Cutthroat Islands, from what many people think is a horrible movie, but I love that. There's Dances with Wolves, there's Signs, Lord of the Rings. But I even like the older stuff, The Seahawk, Prince Valiant. Those are all in my top 10.
Anything newer? What's the newest thing?
The newest one on my list is Signs. However, if I did a top 20, I would fit in How to Train Your Dragon and Tron Legacy, and maybe Solo by John Powell. Those are like the top for me as for brand new. But I mean, if it's top 10, Signs is the earliest one on my top 10 of all time.
I watched Signs a few months ago, and I actually at that point in time did realize that actually really helps that movie.
Oh my God. Well, you know,
there's some flaws in the story like crazy.
Yeah.
So those kind of things make a huge difference.
It does. And also what makes a big difference is, you know, the composer was able to establish the mood with his music right off the bat, because there's an opening title sequence, which has gone the way of the dodo, because every movie, you just get right into it. Where back in the day, you had maybe 2-3 minutes to establish a tone with the music. So that's why I really like Signs. Because everything about that score is in that first minute of the title sequence. And like I said, it sets the tone perfectly.
You don't like Signs because you wish you were a little bit more like Mel Gibson?
I like Signs. I think it's, I've watched it a couple more times and I've actually appreciated it. I think it's the Shyamalan's last good movie.
You're probably right.
Yeah, because he went on to Village, and then that became pretentious, and then he became even more pretentious with Lady in the Water, and then he just sucked afterwards. But it's like, I think if you got the trifecta of The Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, which I think is the best thing he's ever done, and Signs, you got yourself three pretty good movies there.
I agree 100%. So we'll put a book into this. I will ask you one more question.
Sure.
A podcaster, they're wanting to start out. What advice would you give them? I mean, not just on the community building piece, but on the content piece.
Make sure you're loving what you're doing and then talking about. Then get your feet wet a bit. Before you launch your first show, put together three shows and then launch them. Launch those three at the same time. Because you know, your first episode is not going to be as good as your third, and your third's not going to be as good as your 20th. I do not want to listen to the first thing I ever did, because the first thing I ever did, I felt like I needed to be a rock DJ instead of myself. So, I mean, can you imagine somebody, all right, everybody, it's now time to listen to Star Wars. And that's what I sounded like for my first show. It was horrible. So eventually I found my voice and found what I wanted to do. So don't release the first thing you've ever done out there just by itself. Because who knows, by the time you get to your third episode, you might go back to that first one, maybe rejig it or maybe re-record it or whatever. But, you know, just get a feel for what you're doing. But have fun. Just have fun doing it. And if that's satisfying you, then that's great. That's a great hobby to have. I love doing this. I've always wanted to be on radio ever since I was a kid. And the fact that I still can continue doing it without being on radio is fantastic. And I love sharing my knowledge and the music that I love with everybody. So if that's something that you want to do, whatever your interest is, share it and get it out there in the world, because you never know what might happen. You really don't. Someone's going to pick up on that show and learn something new, and you've just influenced somebody that you don't know. And it's fantastic that, and you might get some feedback based on that. And it makes you feel really, really good. Like I said, even if it's just one person, stick with it and keep going.
And again, I have a lot of respect for all the work that you've done. And I really do appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me and talk a little bit today.
Oh, this is great. I like what you're doing. And I think, I think it's something new. I mean, I don't really see too many podcasts out there talking with other podcasters and trying to, and this helps other podcasters out there as well. And I love the format, love the content, and, I'm a loyal listener. So keep it up.
I really appreciate that, man. Thank you. Really do appreciate you listening to this episode and checking it out. I hope you continue to do so with the next. I hope you have an appreciation for what I'm trying to do here. Highlight all the different things all sorts of different creators are doing. I hope you get behind me on that and continue to join me on my journey. I'm Podcast Father, the Indie Podcaster. See you next time.